You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
News Talk 770 AM 92.5 FM WVNN. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Hey, listen, got to tell you about my friends at Otter Creek Farm. You hear their ads all the time on the show. It's such a cool place. Folks, I go out there all the time. Charlene and I have had dinner out there. We stayed out there, you know, overnight. I go shooting out there. If you like hunting pheasant and quail, it is a wing shooting destination, bar none. It's one of the greatest ones in the Southeast United States. It's been featured in Garden and Gun magazine. It's also, though, it's gotten such a reputation for its beauty that it's become a wedding destination. It's a place where you can have corporate retreats because their facilities are so amazing. Their culinary staff, their chefs, if you will, are amazing. All I'm saying is you got to check out Otter Creek Farm. Go to their website, OtterCreekFarmstead.com, OtterCreekFarmstead.com, and see if it's the place where you want to take some time and enjoy your day. Phil Williams recommends it highly. Hey, listen, so going back to the politicalization of COVID, I want to make sure that I make some points because, and I never mind phone calls. The phone calls of they take priority whenever I can get to them. But I'll say this: I do want to get back to some stories that I did prep for the show. I got lots of paper. I got all the paper in my hands. I go through a ream a week getting ready for the show. Well, I was talking about a story right before the break, Wall Street Journal. And it's called the Omicron Variant Panic, and it came out this weekend. And it says on here, the markets have fallen, but the biggest danger is more government lockdowns. And I agree. It's when the government gets hyper-involved on things that did not require hyper-involvement. I mean, you heard Dr. Vaughn. He was pretty clear. He said, you know, if there's what we didn't know back in 2019, we know now. And the reality is, we don't have to see this mass level of government intervention because it's not necessary, and the mutations of a virus are not to be unexpected. And if the data shows that it becomes more deadly for some reason, that would be an anomaly, because typically, in Dr. Vaughn's words, paraphrasing slightly because I'm not a doctor, but in Dr. Vaughn's phraseology a moment ago, he basically said that, like one of our callers did, that it is typical for a virus to mutate. And typically, over time, the mutations become less deadly because a virus does not want to kill off its host. Well, government shutdowns, though, can kill off an economy. And so while they're talking about the fact that the cases are rising in South African province where that new variant has been identified, you got to remember that we've had other variants already. They had, I'd forgotten this one, California's Epsilon variant, Brazil's Gamma variant. Keep in mind, this is the Omicron variant. We are working our way through the Greek alphabet, all right? South Africa already had a beta variant. We'd been through the Delta variant, which was a very difficult one. All said and done, President Biden did join other governments, though, in ordering restrictions on travel. This infuriates me. Where's that story? Let me pull this thing up. Oh, here it is. It was actually Dan Bongino, whose show was on right before mine. He said this over the weekend on Fox News, story I pulled off of Fox. Bongino, Democrats' hypocrisy on COVID travel bans similar to Trump's. And he's right. He's absolutely. Do you remember this? Do you remember when immediately President Trump put in a travel ban before we knew what COVID really was? We could see it, though. And he's like, wow, that's big. We got to do something. And so he immediately put a travel ban in on China. And then next thing you know, Nancy Pelosi is having a press conference in Chinatown because it's part of her San Francisco district, talking about his racist tendencies. And then President Biden comes out with a tweet, then candidate Biden, talking about how xenophobic and just basically racist it was that President Trump would put into place a travel ban from the same African countries that he's banning now. Went so far in his tweet as to say, this is just another means to prevent black and brown people from coming to America. What crap? And yet here he is doing the exact same thing. Well, do we need that right now? Well, Bongino pointed out, this is politics. This is the politicalization of COVID. And it's like, okay, we got to show that we're doing something. Let's do something. But you said that thing you got to do is bad. Yeah, that was them. That was the other guy, not us. That's what we're seeing. And yet the effects that they're having on society with this politicalization of COVID is dramatic. Now, something you're not seeing much in the news unless you search for it. I want to encourage you. Go and look. Do some research on Australia vaccine mandate protests. Australia vaccine mandate protest. Just Google that. In fact, one source that I've been going to quite often is called Rebel News. Rebel News is the best one at reporting the truth of what's happening as people are marching in the streets right now. And I saw pictures of it, by the way, on Rebel News. It looked bigger than 20,000. But right now, the official estimate is that at least 20,000 people marched in Melbourne, Australia on Saturday against mandatory vaccine passports. The lockdowns in Australia have been at epic draconian levels. It's like, didn't Australia used to be a free country? I thought they were like the other United States. I mean, it was the place where you could go and pretty much, you know, live wild and just, you know, just basically freedom was appreciated. It's becoming, if you remember, Australia was formed as a penal colony. It's becoming a penal colony again. There was one child that a picture was taken of, and I pulled this story off Yahoo News. ABC reports that Yahoo News aggregated the story. That's where I found it. And they literally had a child who was walking with her parents with a placard, a sign, and the sign says, "I've spent a quarter of my life in lockdown. I spent a quarter of my life in lockdown. We can't go there." And yet we're already seeing responses. Here's another story from the Wall Street Journal. Wall Street Journal headline says, New York declares state of emergency to combat the Omicron variant. Have you heard this? Now, I get it, I guess. The governor of New York, here's probably her mindset. Oh, Lord, the last guy got thrown out of office, and he's being reviewed right now for doing things wrong in COVID. I better do everything I can to look like I'm trying to not be him. Okay, keep in mind the last governor of New York locked that state down and ruined that economy. Well, the new governor, Governor Hochul, declared a state of emergency already. A state of emergency for a thing that's not even here. Now, here's the deal. This state of emergency is not filled with lockdowns. Her state of emergency was issued probably in conjunction with state law that they had to have a declaration first to allow her to do some things. Take executive action, if you will. What her executive order actually does is it relieves some of the regulations on the number of beds that can be made available in healthcare facilities and that kind of thing. Expanding capabilities, I guess, is what I would say. So she's trying to get ahead of it. But the optics of this are that the governor of New York has already declared a state of emergency for a variant that has not even been fully documented as being in the United States, just in case it comes. That's where we have issues. There's nothing wrong with a governor getting with her staff and saying, all right, staff, here's the deal. Let's war game this. What will we need on day one? Oh, you need a loosening of the restrictions on medical facilities? Okay, put that top of the list. Do you have to do it weeks beforehand? No. No, I would say not. Now, if somebody wants to call in because they work in the healthcare industry and they tell you you have to have this in place weeks ahead of time, okay, but I'm pretty sure by now, a year and a half to 2 years into this, they understand how to expand their capability. I'm also pretty sure that with the Hippocratic Oath that most doctors are going to see somebody if they can. That being said, the politicalization of COVID has caused the liberal New York governor to already declare a state of emergency over a variant that has not even necessarily been here yet. So here's a couple more pieces. You hear it being called the Omicron variant. Interesting thing is, just today I heard Dr. Fauci and President Biden refer to it as the Omicron. I don't care. Whatever. Omicron is the what I'm looking at right now. Another story off of Fox. The World Health Organization, they named it, by the way, the Omicron. They skipped some Greek letters. Now, I don't know all my Greek alphabet. Now, I can give you the phonetic alphabet we used in the military. I know my ABCs. I don't know all my Greek alphabet. But I am reminded that there are some letters that were skipped. They skipped nu and they skipped g. Pray tell, why would that be? Could it be politics at play? I do believe it is. The World Health Organization, according to Fox News, confirmed that it skipped the Greek letters nu and z, which is spelled XI, in naming its new COVID-19 variant, which it dubbed the Omicron variant. Nu, N-U, is too easily confounded with the word new, N-E-W. They don't want to keep calling it the new variant, and people think, it's another new one? Well, it is. It's a new one. And they didn't want to use Z, X-I, because it's a common last name, and they want to avoid using people's names in naming a disease. Guess who has that name? Oh, that would be the Chinese premier, President Xi. Uh-huh. So it's now being suggested, and by the way, Attorney Jonathan Turley commented in this article, he suggested that the concern is that the WHO is again, once again, avoiding any discomfort for the Chinese government because they don't want to be seen as naming it Xi when they know for a fact that it originated in China. Yeah, I'd say that's probably the winner in terms of putting their finger right on it. Nailed it. Nailed it. Nailed it. All right, folks, listen, we're heading to a short break. We come back. I got to wrap up on that, and then we're going to move to our next topic. Our next topic is a legal review. There's some stuff happening, y'all. I mean, there's some stuff happening in the courts. I'm a lawyer. I got to talk about this stuff. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, and yep, just plain right. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Hey, folks, let me tell you about my friends at ZLA Solutions. ZLA Solutions, so good at getting people back to work. I mean, if you're looking for a job right now, just literally go to their website, ZLAUSA.com. You're looking for a job, they've got jobs with benefits and good pay posted. Just go check it out, ZLAUSA.com. If you're an employer looking to fill out the ranks of your workforce, literally, just go to their website, ZLAUSA.com. Start working with them. They will do all the recruiting, all the background checks, the drug testing if necessary. They'll get you a staff together and have you staffed up. That's what they do. ZLA Solutions at ZLAUSA.com. They like to say, at ZLA, we don't make it. We make it better. ZLA Solutions at ZLAUSA.com. All right, so listen, wrapping up this section on the politicalization, and coming up in the next segment, you're going to want to hear, there's even some new news. I mean, this whole day is filled with cases getting started or decisions being rendered that I think are impactful in the legal world. So we're going to talk about this. And kudos to Caitlin for sending me some stuff just a few minutes ago about one of the vaccine mandate cases that I'll go over a little bit more after the break. But right now, let me finish this piece up. Because what I've been talking about is the politicalization of COVID. And there's a story out of National Review that I looked at today and thought, did I write this? Because it sounds just like me. I'm reading it, and it was spot on. And the title of it, and it was issued this past weekend, the title of it is America Needs a Great Decentralization. America Needs a Great Decentralization. And the subtitle is, Restoring the Proper Constitutional Balance of Power Between the States and Washington, D.C. is Critical to the Nation's Future. Folks, I've been saying it all along. Do not forget the fact that we are a republic, that we do have states, and the 10th Amendment to the Constitution does embolden those states to understand that they do have certain rights. The law says they have a distinct interest in the well-being of their own citizenry, and in the sovereignty within their own borders to make decisions on behalf of issues that relate to their citizens. And I'm just going to tell you, right now what we've seen is an overarching centralized control out of D.C. that is like at epic levels right now. The piece out of National Review that I'm looking at says that type of overarching and centralized control makes for what they call a frail and inflexible governance. Because when you get into things like, you know, vaccine mandates and the legal battles that are going to occur and all that kind of stuff, you have to realize everything begins to shift back to the state capitals. You have to realize that the only way this works, gets resolved, gets changed, is if the states begin pushing back like they are right now. And it says here that forward-looking congressional policymakers should capture the momentum of decentralization and advance an agenda to devolve powers and responsibilities to the states and the people. And state leaders, how many times have I said this? And state leaders should do their part by embracing the new opportunities and responsibilities that such a decentralization offers them. This is a great article. November 26th, written by Michael Lucci for National Review. And it's exactly what I've been talking about on this show since the day we started, is that we've got to have a state legislature in place, and we've got to have an executive branch in place. We've got to even have our own state courts that are poised to care about liberty first. If you recall, I said multiple times that I will err on the side of liberty every single time. And that I get it. I understand that there are things that need to be done sometimes in emergency situations, but every decision should start from the standpoint of liberty. And they're not right now with the federal government, because the federal government has gotten to the point that it is so bloated and so large that it does not view us at the state level as being worthy of making decisions ourselves. They need to do it for us. We need to make those decisions. Those poor little right side ruffians, they don't know how to make decisions. We'll do that for them. No, we don't. What we need is that localized control that comes from our own state legislature, our own state elected leaders, our own school boards, our own, yes, and we do. This decentralization is the only thing that will prevent the type of politicalization of COVID and other things that come up. Well, right now, the federal government, according to this article, and I agree with it completely, is not making that easy for the state. The past 10 months have been an assault on federalism and state authority, according to Michael Lucci, and he's right. I mean, just look at the things that have been coming down that we're having to fight daily. How much time is being spent by our attorneys? Worthy time, mind you, worthy time. But how much time is being spent by our attorneys general in the various states to fight back on behalf of their states because the federal government has forgotten that states do have rights? And the politicalization of COVID is at the heart of it. And Americans in this article rightfully see that Washington, D.C. is more often considered to be a source of problems than solutions. Polls are showing that people are losing their trust in the intent and competence of governance. And we've got to get back to the place that the states can be seen as outposts of freedom, with a state legislature and a state executive that cares about freedom first. And the politicalization of COVID is not what's priority. All right, folks. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, just plain right. Got some good legal stuff I'll tell you about when we get back. It'll be number 3 on the Triple Dipper, a legal review. We'll be right back. Newstalk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid and conservative, and yep, just plain right. Hey folks, my friends at eTax Breaks, eTaxBreaks.com, man, those guys have some more kind of a cool job. I mean, literally, can you imagine going to work every day and having the joy of just calling your clients saying, found you some more money? That's what they do. They find you some more money. And so they do that every single day. That's what they do. They're good at it too. You may not have any idea that the generally common sense ways that you chose to run your business, things like where did you place your business geographically, who did you hire, when did you hire them, did you keep your business open during the pandemic days, all these things and more qualify many businesses for tax rebates, tax incentives, tax credits. They did grants sometimes. It's amazing. There's over 3,000 programs around the nation, and the folks at eTax Breaks, I know them personally. They got 23 years of experience. They go out there and they beat the bushes and they just find money for their clients. And that's what they do. And in like July alone, they found $7 million for their clients in 1 month. I'm just telling you, they've got a special website just for our listeners. Go to etaxbreaks.com/rightside. They only get paid if they find you money. etaxbreaks.com/rightside. So, let's jump segments here. Got to tell you, about some stuff happening in the legal world. And, you know, I'm a lawyer, so this stuff's fascinating to me, and I hope it is to you, because some of it affects your lives, even though it's going on in other places. It affects our lives here. So first one I'll take is one that I hadn't even had in my show prep because it just came out. I mean, literally, like breaking news here, just came out. Missouri v. Biden, one of those cases that's fighting against the vaccine mandates. In this case, it is fighting against the CMS version. The CMS version, Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services. Keep in mind, this is the one that says that healthcare facilities have to mandate vaccines for their employees or lose their Medicare and Medicaid funding. It's a crippling thing. You're talking about it'll shut some hospitals down. It will literally, if they don't do it, they go under. And, you know, how many people want to see their hospital shut down? Well, we are seeing some. There was one, I had the story last week. It was almost laughable. I think it was in San Diego, California, if I'm not mistaken. They fired employees who refused to get the vaccine, and then the next week they had to shut down for lack of staffing. Go figure. But so a case came out today in Missouri v. Biden. All right. This is one of those cases that multiple states have joined in on. And keep in mind, they're looking for a preliminary injunction. They're gonna work through the merits of the case itself. Should the government be allowed to pursue the vaccine mandates in the manner in which they are trying to do right now, the heavy-handed, you know, approach to you get them all vaccinated or we're not going to fund you anymore. The bottom line is this: they're looking for what's called a preliminary injunction. And to back you up here, a preliminary injunction means you basically go to the court and you say, Your Honor, we're going to try the merits of this, but it's going to take a while. In the meantime, we need you to stop them from doing things that we believe are harmful and stop them from doing it during the pendency of this case, during the pendency of this action. And you have to meet certain criteria, like for one, that you have to be able to prove there's a threat of irreparable harm. You have to prove that the balance between the harm and the injury, basically that there's an imbalance. You have to prove that the probability is that you'll also succeed on the merits of the case and that it's in the public interest. Well, the court in Missouri v. Biden has enjoined the CMS mandate and has done so overwhelmingly. Like, they just pretty much put a body slam on it. Again, kudos to Caitlin for getting this to me in a quick and timely fashion. It just came out. Here's some things that came out of that court order. I'm looking at it right now. It's a 32-page court order. They say things like, where is it? Here we go. Like, for instance, CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, they delayed putting this in place, but yet they said it was an emergency. And in doing so, they bypassed their own notice and comment requirements. They're usually required to post things and allow comment. They didn't do that. They just said, here it is, live with it. But you don't have to start living with it until January. So the court says that CMS's own delay undermines its emergency justifications. The next thing is that CMS, it says, failed to meet its good cause burden, especially in light of the unprecedented, controversial, and health-related nature of the mandate. It also goes on to say, the mandate is deemed to be potentially arbitrary and capricious. Yep. The mandate's arbitrary and capricious because CMS improperly rejected alternatives. Because the mandate is arbitrary and capricious because of its broad scope. The mandate is arbitrary and capricious due to CMS's sudden change in course. Literally, this is called a legal body slam, by the way. Just so you know, I can go ahead and paraphrase for you. Legal body slam. And the plaintiffs did demonstrate potential for irreparable harm and that it's in the public interest. All said and done, that's breaking news for you right now. I'll quit wearing out the details, but the end result of this is Missouri v. Biden, one of the many cases fighting the mandates. In this case, it's the healthcare mandate for CMS. Keep in mind, we got multiple mandates. We got the executive order for federal employees. We got the executive order mandating for federal contractors. We got the executive order for Medicare and Medicaid service recipients. And we got the executive order for private employers that have 100 or more employees. We got four different types of mandates. This nailed one of them right here. That's good. That's good doings. Thank you, Caitlin, for sending that in. Other things happening. Hey, Copper, grab the mic. So one of the things that I know you've been tracking is the fact that this week the Supreme Court is taking up the Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization, the pro-life case.
That's right.
And that's what, Wednesday, I believe, right?
It is.
Now, tell me real quick, aren't you helping organize a prayer vigil, or is that already taking place?
That's right. No, it's taking place tomorrow and the 1st, so it'll be a 48-hour prayer vigil outside the abortion clinic downtown in Huntsville. Perfectly peaceful. We're not going to, cross the border or anything, just on the sidewalk. We're going to just be quietly praying for victory at the Supreme Court.
Well, this could be a big one. I mean, it is. I mean, certainly, I'd say in your lifetime, and my lifetime is twice as long as your lifetime. So in my lifetime, this is potentially the biggest pro-life case to come before the Supreme Court in anyone's memory, maybe ever, since Roe.
It's important.
Yeah. Well, thank you for organizing that. And I know you've been talking about it on your show.
Yeah.
We will see. And hopefully your show next Sunday will be filled with good news.
I hope so. And yeah, I invite all of you all to come out and pray alongside me.
Hey, and get a shameless plug in for your show real quick.
Okay. That's right. Prayers for Life Radio is every Sunday at 3 p.m. I talk about top pro-life and abortion news of the week and end with a prayer that you all can join in.
There you go. Outstanding. Well, yeah, to back you up on that, so here's the deal. Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization, that's the name of the case. It's a Supreme Court case that originated in Mississippi. It's coming before the Supreme Court, and we have arguably the most conservative Supreme Court that in anyone's memory. And the case has attracted, right now, the article I'm looking at, written by Jonathan Turley for The Hill, says that this case has attracted the third highest number of briefs in the court's history, meaning that all the interested parties who want to supply briefs for the court's consideration do so. This one attracted the third highest after the highest two were the Obergefell same-sex marriage case and the Obamacare ruling, and now this one is the third highest. So 48 years ago, if you recall, the court held in Roe v. Wade, that the right of personal privacy includes the abortion decision. But it went on to say the right was not unqualified and must be considered against important state interests and regulation. So in this case, do Mississippi laws have a say? And then in 1992, there was a sort of a fracturing of the court, and they sort of changed the rulings of Roe and went into what's called plurality rulings, meaning that it was a majority, but it was pretty close. I mean, we've had multiple 5-4 rulings. I mean, for over 50 years, we've had like 5-4 rulings out of the Supreme Court on pro-life issues. And what it creates, though, is a sort of a level of judicial confusion, if you will. Well, Jonathan Turley points out that we may be looking at, for the first time ever, what he calls that long-evaded issue on reproductive rights called clarity. And clarity, in this case, I mean, so right now the pro-choice folks are saying this is an issue of stare decisis, which basically means you stand by previous precedents. And they're telling the court, you can't overturn your previous rulings. But even Chief Justice John Roberts, who is often known to be sort of the one who hangs on to previous rulings and listens to precedent to the extent that he doesn't want to change, he himself has written in a more recent opinion in 2010, he said, we cannot embrace a narrow ground of this decision simply because it is narrow. It must also be right. And so what we're looking at right now is the potential that Roe could be weakened or even overturned depending upon how this goes on Wednesday. So if you are a pro-life person, like I am, like Copper certainly is too, then that's a matter of prayer for you on Wednesday. One of the biggest pro-life cases in memory is coming on this particular Wednesday. Couple other things happening. It's just interesting to me that after 3 years now, this is a total change of subject, by the way. I'm still in legal stuff. Total change of subject. Work with me here. Jussie Smollett is finally coming to trial. If you remember, Jussie Smollett is the actor who claimed that he had gone out for a sandwich at 2 a.m. or something. And he's black and he's openly gay, and he says that he was assaulted by a couple of guys wearing Donald Trump MAGA hats, and that they beat him up and hung a noose around his neck, And it turns out after the fact that the two guys who did it, they were seen on surveillance camera. They came and confessed that he had paid them to help stage it. And they were also actors. There were two brothers named Abel and Ola Osundero, and that they had been paid $3,500 to stage the attack. And so and the media hype was unbelievable. I mean, he was doing interviews, and what it turned out, it appears it turned out to be, is that he was literally faking it for, you know, for the press. And at first, he was charged with multiple counts, 16 counts of disorderly conduct and for lying to the authorities. And then all the charges were unexpectedly dropped. Like, oh, we're not going to pursue this. Bam. Done. You're free. Have a good life. Well, after reviewing all the facts and circumstances, the authorities decided, no, we're not doing this. And the charges were brought back. They were revived. And he goes to trial today. So that's happening today. Brand new, brand spanking new in the Chicago courtroom, Jussie Smollett going to trial. All right, I got a few more in legal world that I'll tell you about after this break. Copper, go ahead and take us into that break. We'll come back here in a few minutes, wrap this day up. It's been a good one. It's been a full one. Folks, I'm just telling you, it's a target-rich environment. When you got a talk show, a conservative talk show, there is no end right now to the things to talk about. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, in the final minutes of this show. Phil Williams and Copper will be back again tomorrow, though. 2 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. That's where we are every single day. And you can also find us, by the way, go to rightsideradio.org. You can find downloaded segments of every show in podcast form. And like I said earlier in the show, we have now hit 14,500 plus downloads and growing by the day, and we appreciate that. It's an honor to have this platform, and the fact that we got an audience that's so engaged like this is just so cool. Folks, I got to tell you too, real quickly, Just Love Coffee. So Just Love Coffee Cafe, two locations, one on Hughes Road in Madison and the other on South Memorial Parkway in Huntsville. Amazing coffees, amazing gourmet blends. You know, if you want the macchiatos and the lattes and the cappuccinos, they got it all. They got incredible brews, just a regular good flavored coffee. I drink a cup every day on the show. But then also they're one of those places that does amazing things for the community. And this past weekend at the Madison location, they held a fundraiser for Maria House, which is a program of the Huntsville Dream Center. It provides housing and resources for single women, single mothers in need. And they had a great fundraiser. And Travis from Just Love Coffee just wanted me to thank everybody for their generosity for supporting the Maria House this past weekend at Just Love Coffee. They are more than coffee and great food, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, by the way. They also are an amazing organization that does a lot for the community. So I hope you'll support them. Just Love Coffee, Hughes Road in Madison, and South Memorial Parkway in Huntsville. Hey, listen, just wrapping this up, a couple things that are out there, be aware. Ghislaine Maxwell, she was Jeffrey Epstein's, accused as Jeffrey Epstein's madam or fixer, helping him find young underage females so they could be abused, basically, is what the allegations are. Well, the trial started today, finally. So not only is Jussie Smollett the other high-profile trial in the nation right now, but this one. Now, both Jussie Smollett's trial and Ghislaine Maxwell's trial, both are sealed courtrooms. They're not allowing press or media or cameras of any kind. So I hope we get to hear the full story. Maxwell faces up to 70 years in prison if she's convicted of helping the dead guy, Jeffrey Epstein, who was just, by all accounts, was just an awful individual. But she's accused of helping him find these underage victims. Well, the interesting piece of this I did not know. Story off the Washington Examiner is that one of the three key prosecutors trying the case against Ghislaine Maxwell is James Comey's daughter. James Comey's daughter, the former U.S. Attorney General. James Comey's daughter. Oh, wait. Yes. Head of the FBI? I just lost myself there. But James Comey's daughter, Maureen Comey, is one of the three lead prosecutors. I just find that to be interesting. I don't take much out of it, except that she's there. But it's just interesting to me that she's involved in that case. One other thing is just be aware. Waukesha. Waukesha hopefully is bringing about changes in the overly liberal bail systems that we have everywhere that lets prisoners walk the streets when they should be kept away from innocents like we had in Waukesha. That's changing, we hope, right now. All right, folks, what a great show. What a great show. Listen, you got good stuff today, and we'll be back tomorrow with more of it. I love doing this, and I appreciate every single one of you being part of our audience, you bunch of right-side ruffians. All right, listen, we'll be back solid, conservative, and just plain right. Coming up next, you got the great one, Mark Levin. See you tomorrow.